Welcome to the International Schools Podcast. I'm your co-host, John Micton, and Dan is out traveling, so won't be with us today. But I'm very excited because over the years, and I don't even know how many years, I've done a lot of work on digital citizenship, and sometimes having resources that are interactive and that kind of hands-on, which bridge kind of the conversation between parents and students, are not that easy to find. And over the years, and we'll find out, I've had the privilege of tapping into this amazing resource called the Media Mentor Month. And it's a real privilege to have Carrie Lee Beasley, who's the high school learning and tech coach at the Western Academy of Beijing, who's one of the creators. And I think you might be the founder, but we can talk about that. And then with her today is Sandra Chow, Director of Digital and Innovative Learning from Keystone Academy, and Alex McMillan, Instructional Coach, Technology Coach at Shanghai American School. And when I reached out to Carrie some months ago, actually quite a few months ago, she said, "Oh, we need to have Alex and Sandra as part of this conversation." So it's just really exciting because I know very likely sometimes you create things and you think, "Oh, nobody's using it," or you might think a lot of people are using it, but it definitely is something that I wait with bated breath every March to see what's coming up. And then I just get blown away and I love it. And it's so useful. And I use them year after year after year. I find I get a much better engagement with parents than I do with teachers, but that's a whole other story that we can talk about. And the kids love it too, especially in primary school, 5, year 4, 5, and 6, really do engage with it. So thank you all of you for being here on the International School Podcast. And am I right to say, Carrie Lee, you're the founder, you're kind of the spark, you're the
I
inventor
am,
of
yes.
this?
One of the co-founders, to be fair, I must credit also my collaborator at the time, Daniel Johnson, who was the director of well-being at the GEMS World Academy, where I started this in Switzerland. So he and I kicked this off, and I guess it came about with a sort of, for me at least, a frustration of hearing that technology was like the root of all evil and that it was, ruining our kids and all of that sort of stuff. And as a tech coach, that sort of doesn't sit particularly well, especially when we see all the great things that it can do. So we really wanted to create something that didn't just focus on all of the awful things, but some of the amazing things, the connecting things, the exciting learning things that make it such a dynamic thing to be involved with, and to really help parents connect along with their children in those endeavors, and sort of to shift the focus from a negative sort of analog is good and wholesome and digital is bad and distracting to how can we interact with it and use it positively.
So one thing that's really interesting about the way you set up this Media Mentor Month, which you publicize on social media and on your blog, is that often it's a game. I remember the Monopoly game. That one I got so much traction in. I had about 30, 40 parents, and we played Monopoly, and they loved it. And then I printed them out and it just took hours of work of laminating them and everything, but it was great. And I'm just wondering, have you always kind of gamified it? Is it, because there is the idea of the interactivity between the parent and the student. Has that been kind of your thinking, is to make it approachable by gamifying it?
I love that you would think that that was my idea, but so we initially started out by having like a calendar that you would print out and put on the
Yes.
fridge and sort of have a little interaction that way. But it was when I was working alongside Sandra and Clint Hamada from International School of Beijing that we came up with the idea, and I don't remember who came up with it. We were sitting brainstorming at a cafe, and we just looked a little bit. We were trying to get, think about how we can inject a little bit of life into this again, and come up with a different format.
Nice. And Sandra, can I ask you, what was your inspiration about the gamification? Because Clint's not here, so you're going to have to represent both brains.
Yeah, so I mean, we were gathering together over a few months because of COVID, and we were leaning on each other and kind of called each other the get along gang because we were really, really leaning on each other throughout that COVID time. And so we had gotten together at a cafe, and Carrie Lee's like, "Look, I have Mentor Media Month coming up. I just need to spice it up a little bit." And I think we were just brainstorming. We tried different things. We were we had gotten together to refresh the calendar the year before, I think, or the year before that. And then we just thought, what about, and then we were like a Scrabble or, and then we thought, oh, remember when in McDonald's, they used to have Monopoly and you would collect those stickers and put it on. And so that's kind of, I think what I remember was we moved into this Monopoly board and we used it at our school and it really kicked off as well. It was so much fun for the kids to collect the streets or certain parts. And yeah, it was quite successful on our end. We just transformed the calendar, a lot of the questions, and just put it into the Monopoly format.
Excellent. Yeah. And it's lovely. I mean, I still have it. I mean, the thing is about them is you can keep them year to year. They don't outdate themselves. And well, I'm sure this next one is going to have an iteration with AI. I mean, it was going to be hard not. I don't know. Alex, do you think they're timeless?
That's a great question. At the moment, I think the cards are largely conceptual and thematic. So for the time being, yeah, I think they have a certain timelessness about them. And actually, our crew just worked on an expansion pack. So we've got an additional 20 cards just focused on AI. So this next Media Mentor Month is going to have maybe some expansion packs that you're going to see coming out soon.
So they can all kind of expansion pack. That's great.
I know. I don't know. Okay, you heard it here first, folks. Okay, I don't know if we were supposed to say that, but oh my gosh,
that's out of the bag.
It's out of the bag.
There'll be some fun. Yeah, there'll be some. Yeah, sorry. There's a little bit of a lag. Sorry. Go ahead.
The expansion pack is always, you know, if you play Catan or some of these other games, there's a lot of energy around it. You know, I got the expansion pack. So I love the way you, even when you're talking about it, you're very enthusiastic and all of you are very enthusiastic about it. But I'm going to ask you a challenging question. And I'll let whoever wants to. Carrie Lee started with the positive things about technology. We have a lot of traffic now. With John Haidt's book, The Anxious Generation. And in the last 2 days, we had interviews with William Sonder and Daniel Katowski, both AI ethicists that have left OpenAI. And if you combine those narratives together, it's quite sobering and quite intense. And I love the fact that when Carrie Lee, you were talking about, is that we need to bring out the positive. How are you balancing that as you start thinking about next year or even in the past years? Because you do want to have a positive footprint. That's really critical. But how are you kind of balancing also the challenges? I'm just curious. I'll let Carrie, Carrie Lee, do you want to start first and then we'll rotate?
Yeah, I think one thing that's important to note is that a correlation doesn't necessarily mean causation. And there's a lot of energy in the anxious generation, but a lot of those statistics don't necessarily mean a correlation. And I think we need to be cautious in the way that we're jumping on board. It's a really easy one to get on board with. And I encourage you to look at Dr. Andy Probilsky's work on this, just to provide a slightly countering perspective or at least a calming perspective. But in terms of how we're dealing with it, you're not going to push this under the carpet, right? So I think what we're after is to have that open dialogue between parents and their kids. So when I think about one of the questions on our AI expansion pack, it is, in what ways is AI helpful and in what ways is it harmful? So just opening the doors to those conversations so that you can recognize those, both of those things. And I think like a lot of the times parents who are really down on technology are the same parents who are tracking their kids using Find My iPhone and all of that sort of stuff. So they're forgetting about all the good things that we can do or the helpful, potentially helpful things that we can do as well. There's no one thing is all good and one thing is all bad. So I think we just need to keep a balanced perspective and keep our conversation lines open. What do you others think?
Yeah, Sandra?
Yeah, I was thinking like the premise of having Media Mentor Month was very much about conversations and having parents engage in meaningful conversations with their kids about how they use technology. And sometimes it might even help them to reflect on their own use so that they can think about how they can have healthier habits in terms of technology as well. And having that conversation is really that bonding that you're having with your child. And so at the root of it, it's building up those habits, habits of family, habits of social conversations, just so that parents can have this means to really dialogue with their kids about what they think, and guide them. And it's not just coming from the school, it's also coming from their parents and what they think, and hopefully opening up as there's more complicated questions as they move forward, then their parents have already started that dialogue with their child.
No, and I think the conversation is so important. And there are a couple points that I want to loop back on. Carrie Lee, I so agree. I've read the book and I found it, I don't know, I found there was a lot lacking. There was nothing about all the research that's being taken place in South Korea and in China. There's a lot of research because both those countries are dealing with that. And I agree, it just felt like, wow, kind of one brushstroke and now this is all bad. So, and I thank you, you have put up an article from the New York Times. And I think, as you say, whenever we have these books that come out that are kind of, I think, often fear-mongering, and then you get on the podcast circuit and the Morning Breakfast America circuit, it suddenly just takes on a life of its own. And so I really appreciate you reminding us the importance of balance. And Sandra, also those conversations. And what's interesting, Sandra, you said also having parents reflect on their own habits. Mary Aiken always says we're asking the wrong questions. We shouldn't be asking kids, when is it appropriate to give kids digital devices? We should be asking, when is it appropriate for a parent to have a digital device in front of a child? And I think that's what you in many ways are saying, is let's self-reflect as adults. What are our points of reference as we engage in these conversations? So both of you, I just so appreciate that perspectives you've shared. Alex, some of your own thinking on this issue.
Yeah, I think everybody is hitting the nail on the head. I think to contribute to this conversation is maybe an anecdote that I can give. So when we were creating the Media Mentor Month cards the first time around, there were a lot of different iterations and versions. And I remember pulling some high school kids aside in the library, and I walked by with one of the early prototypes and said, hey, what do you think of this? Could you take this home and try it out with your parents? And I said, yeah, sure. They were eager to give it a shot. They were kind of interested because there was a pack of cards that were all colorful and interesting looking. And a couple of days later, I bumped into them again and I said, how did it go? And they said, the cards were wonderful. We put them on the dinner table and we had a conversation with our parents just as we had expected. And just like Carrie Lee and Sandra have been talking about the initial purpose. And the surprising thing was both kids said, you know which cards we didn't really like? We didn't really like the AI cards. We actually took those out and put them on the side. And that was such a shock to me to hear, because I thought, wow, AI is so topical and so interesting. And they said, my parents didn't know anything about AI. Both kids' parents. So I talked to two kids. One is from a home of Japanese and Chinese parents. And one, I forget where her parents are from. But it's another country. So there were kind of three different cultures represented amongst these two different students. And they both said something similar. My parents didn't really want to talk about it. They didn't really know what it was. They didn't really know how to talk about AI. But all of our other Media Mentor Month cards, they were comfortable to talk about. So talking about safety and creativity and whatnot, and family usage of technology. All of that, they said, oh yeah, we had these long, great conversations. And to me, that was so eye-opening why this was so important. Our world is rapidly changing. And yes, our teachers are rallying behind people like Carrie Lee and Sandra and other tech coaches or tech influencers in schools. And yet there's a missing piece to the puzzle. If parents aren't on board, parents aren't talking about it, how is this being reinforced at home? Because ultimately we want to create a culture around the responsible, wise, and as you all have said, balanced use of artificial intelligence. So I think with any new technology, it's an opportunity to explore what does it mean to maintain our values and to maintain what we already believe as being a good person or as being a thinker or a student. But what does it mean to use AI while being a thinker or a good person or a citizen of our country? It's really redefining who we are, or in some cases, reinforcing who we are. So all of that to just say, I think these conversations need to happen. And through having parent coffees and putting these cards in parents' hands, showing them thinking routines about how you can use them and role-playing with parents, I think while it might sound simple or kind of silly to role play with parents, I think it's very necessary, just based on my observation, these kinds of conversations I've been having with kids.
Alex, I can't agree with you more. And I love it also that they're cards, so they're physical cards. You're not getting onto a device. You're not doing like a Kahoot or something. And you're actually sitting down with this card and you're having reading and discussing it. And I think those pauses and those reflection points are far and few between, often in families. And if this can be a vehicle to have those conversations that you're highlighting are so important, I think that's just wonderful. Because I think if we're not going to have these conversations, we are going to wake up to a world that maybe we're like, yeah, don't think that was what I was anticipating. Sandra.
Yeah. And I have two thoughts on that. I know even for AI, some of our students have been hesitant to use AI, just not sure whether they get in trouble or just afraid of what might happen if they were using it. So there is that little bit of fear that's come along with AI, even for our kids who are in many ways early adopters sometimes, which was surprising for me when I was working with the students. And in the beginning, I was like, how many of you have used AI? And really only a few of them had. It wasn't as large a number as we had anticipated, thinking that they'd all jump in, because some of them were just afraid to use it and get in trouble. But I think there's that same fear on the parent side, and which is why I love doing these with the parents, because we don't just give them the packets or the cards. Like Alex or Kaylee, we've had parent sessions where we can introduce the cards, talk about what they're about, and have role play with them. Because there's this feeling that many parents have is they have to be perfect parents. I know I have that feeling sometimes as a parent. And being able to talk to other parents and dialogue with them. So we did some role plays, you know, maybe you're in the car or maybe you're walking to school, or maybe you're at the dinner table and you pull out a card and one person pretended to be one of the kids. And it was nice to have other parents to bounce off. Oh, how would you talk about this? What would you say in a very non-threatening way? And there's no way that you could anticipate all the answers that your kids will have, but at least it kind of helps them to settle their hearts and feel like, oh yeah, I think I could do this. Even if I don't have all the answers, it could be, let's look this up together, or let's, you know, try it and see what happens. And it's a safe environment to try out and know that I'm not the only parent who feels this way.
I agree. I think if parents can be in a room where they can share and learn from each other and understand they have some shared understanding, some shared hesitations, some shared challenges. And then, as you say, you know, these cards provide an opportunity to kind of level the playing field, because it's about a conversation. It's not about a kid being a good consumer of, because, you know, people say kids are digital natives. I disagree. They're digital consumers. They're digital consumers on steroids. They do very little thinking. And the level of creativity, I think, is questionable sometimes when you're on an Instagram reel or TikTok, or even when you put up a 30-second video. But I think what you're saying is that if we can create these platforms, as you are, all three of you in your context, where parents can have these conversations, feel safe, show some vulnerability, and understand that vulnerability is more common and it's okay to be vulnerable. And these conversations are a bridge to maybe finding some of that balance. I just really appreciate you sharing that point. Now, I'm curious because there is a quote when I first started consulting and presenting many, many years ago. Somebody said, there are no prophets in your own backyard. So how much traction are you getting in your own respective schools? Because I know in my professional learning network, when you release it, there's a lot of buzz. I know a lot of people are tapping into it. You're extremely generous with the resources, the amount of work you put in and the passion, and you literally say, here, take it, go with it. That is just phenomenal. And I want to thank you again, because that's just something, it's a real gift for people like myself that are supporting students, parents, and teachers. So how does it go in your own respective schools? I'm curious, you know, how are you selling this in your schools? Carrie, Lee?
So at WAB, we had parent meetings in the elementary school and in the middle school. We didn't necessarily have a high school specific one for this particular thing, but it's also around timing of the year and what's happening in those times in those different parts of the school. But it was really lovely to see the impact, I think, that particularly for us in China, the bilingual cards had, or at least when we printed them out in Chinese and in English. And just to have something in your own language is so valuable and so important. And I think it also shows that we value the multiple languages that are spoken in our schools. And I have to do a huge shout out to all of the wonderful people that contributed to the translations, because I think that helped people connect in a way that they wouldn't be able to. And I think share it a little bit more broadly. So, yes. So to answer your question, primary school and middle school has been the focus for us at WAB, but just again, really appreciative of those wonderful translators.
Yeah, and you have a French version, and we're a bilingual school, and it's just great. Parents really appreciate. I think it's also because then they feel they can have those conversations in their language, and so much, if you think of our own resources in our school, are very Anglo-centric. Western-centric sometimes, and the resources tend to be very geared towards North America, the UK, Australia, New Zealand, kind of Anglophone. So I know for the French, in my case, they just loved having those French resources, because sometimes it's not as even. Alex, and then Sandra.
Yeah, I just want to echo that idea that having the cards in multiple languages, especially for international schools, is so, so important. And based on that conversation with the two students that I mentioned earlier, they said one of the challenges was, well, my parents had heard about AI, but some of the language on our initial prototype card pack was too hard. And the students told me, well, we had to kind of translate these and we're kind of struggling. So we found that it was just easier to just ignore the conversation around AI. So as we went along, and I think it might have been Carrie Lee's suggestion or somebody else in the group, I'm not sure, but thinking about how we should have these multilingual sets of cards. When we rolled it out at our school, we did all three divisions at the same time. We have a tech coach for each division, and we co-presented together. And our parents can speak multiple languages, but English, Korean, and Chinese are some of the major languages that our community speaks. And it was so amazing to see people kind of go after the cards and want to collect them. It was a commodity. And I think that there's something about the way that the cards were designed, with nice looking color palette and emojis, the size and the portability. There's just something pleasant about them. And so when information or these questions that are already out there on the internet, I'm sure you can find similar questions, right? We're not that original, but when the information was packaged in a certain way, we really saw parents go after them. And so it was exciting to see some parents saying, well, can I have two or three sets of cards? I want two English ones. I'm going to give one to my wife, and I'm going to use Chinese at the dinner table. Wow. Sure. Yeah. Go for it. So I think What I would like to see, though, is that we have more than one Media Mentor Month conversation to be really impactful. And what I mean is more than one per year. Just based on the momentum and the enthusiasm, I'm hoping that maybe we can kind of think about it as trying to build culture and a shared set of norms around AI, that it's not a shameful thing. We want to embrace it. And we believe that by using AI, it keeps our kids competitive. But at the same time, there's a polarity that we have to manage. It's not either we completely ban it or we completely embrace it. There is going to be some sort of reality that falls in between, in which we want the students to be wise consumers of AI. It reminds me a lot of kind of the initial intention behind the internet. I think early on when the internet was becoming public, people believed that it was going to be this diplomatic sharing of resources where humanity solves all of our global problems. And yet, look at YouTube comments, and it's anything but that. We found that we do have to have some sort of regulations. We do have to have some limitations to make it a fair and equitable place for everyone to have their voices heard. And sometimes tools and services can have bias baked in. So there are problematic elements to AI, but I think the solution is education, embracing it, talking about it, and not trying to avoid it. And I think the Media Mentor Month cards do that. We encourage these tough conversations.
And I think, you know, for a lot of parents, they have memories of playing with cards. Many of them might be of the Pokemon generation or whatever, you know, Euro or World Cup or whatever it is. And, you know, cards are, they're tactile, your hands. And board games are still very popular. They've had kind of a resurgence. So there's a lot of, you know, tactile aspect to it. And it's, you know, it's again, you don't have to load up a program. It's just so accessible. And I think you're so right, Alex, is that we need to have conversations about the good, the bad, and the ugly, and really make sure that we're comfortable engaging with all of those aspects. Sandra.
Yeah, I was just thinking when you were saying like being a prophet in your own in your own home or in your own country, I think for us, this was actually a really easy conversation. Everyone was so eager to come. Like Carrie-Lee and Alex, we focused on primary school. We did a session for primary school, and then we did middle school twice because we did it during parent-teacher conferences or student-led conferences. But it was actually really well attended, especially the primary one. And at first, we just put a couple of decks because we wanted them to interact with each other, and everyone was concerned that they weren't going to get their own decks. But at the end, same thing. They were so excited to grab them. And we found that we reorganized the cards slightly different because we're a bilingual school. So we wanted to make sure that there was a primary set that was Chinese and English, and then a middle school set that was Chinese and English. So as opposed to having the English with primary and middle school, or like the older kid version on front back, we kind of redid it so that it was primary Chinese English and then secondary or middle school Chinese English. And the kids were asking for the parents were asking for the middle school deck. Can we get the middle school deck? And we said, sure, you just have to go to the middle school library to get it. And so they were all running over to get it afterwards. It was really quite cool to see how excited they were. And then not only that, our teachers got wind of it, and they all wanted a deck for their advisory or.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. And so it actually became quite popular, and we had to do a reprint of them because we weren't sure how many we'd need. So it was nice to see how popular that it got.
That's such a good sign. If you know, the measure is having to reprint, there's a demand, and that demand means that there's engagement and those conversations are happening. What a great anecdote, the way you set that up in your elementary and middle school. Thanks. Carrie Lee.
Yeah, I just wanted to shout out about, over the years, we started this in 2018, and throughout the years, The thing that has advanced this and made it better and better each year, I believe, is the collaboration with other educators. And honestly, we're so lucky in that we have these wonderful people around us to make us smarter. I mean, and I'm so pleased that you brought up the physical nature of the cards. There is something about having it in your hands that makes a difference. And that's, you know, what we wanted to create here, and wouldn't have happened without the collaboration of the people that were contributing to this. I just, when we started this idea, certainly didn't have, you know, I thought maybe my mum would read it and that's about it. But it's been really nice that the people keep coming back and saying, hey, what are you doing this year? But it's also a lot of pressure. I'm like, oh gosh, I've got to come up with some more questions now. What am I going to do? And that's when I tap into those amazing resources globally that I've managed to connect with over the years. So, yeah.
That's so
and
true.
Originally it was like a gumball sheet. Yeah, it was like sheets of paper you could print off, put strips. Into a glass jar, strips, and then pull them out.
Nice.
So, yeah.
But Alex came up with a better idea.
I think the collaboration is an important point. You know, we've had so many guests over the last 3 years, but the common theme is their amplification of their knowledge, of their skills, and their values is always not on the backs, but because of the provocations and the relationships they build on the professional learning network. And I think international schools and international educators are quite generous and really open. And it's great because we can only, you know, we only learn better when we hear different perspectives and different voices. So I just think that's so important. I'm curious, this, you know, correct me if I'm wrong. I get a sense this is really about conversations in the home between parents and kids. How much is this seeping into the classroom where teachers are saying, you know what, I'm going to take full responsibility for these conversations. I'm going to have them not only in advisory, but if I'm doing physics and we're thinking of a graph or something, whatever it might be, you know, how much is that percolating into what I call the taught curriculum in the lessons? Is that a harder challenge, you think? And maybe we'll start with Carrie Lee and rotate around again. Carrie Lee.
Yeah, I think Sandra mentioned teachers are wanting to use this for advisory, and certainly that's the direction that we're heading in the high school initially anyway. But if we think about the topic of AI, that's an unavoidable one for all teachers at the moment. We're pretty lucky at WAB that we have a lot of support for experimenting and trying new things. And we have a weekly sort of AI playground where teachers are coming along and we're introducing slightly new things each week. But I think those conversations are happening now in those classrooms, and it may not be in a format of cards specifically for those curricular based subjects, but certainly the work that they do with the cards in the mentor classrooms is spilling over into those other subjects.
Sandra?
Yeah, I think in terms of using it with teachers, how I anticipated, and we haven't done this yet, but was doing more professional development time where teachers got to actually engage with the cards and have those conversations with each other. Because I think being able to hear what another colleague thinks about some of these topics, and it's not just AI being one of them, but even just how do you use media? How do we ensure we have well-being while using our various digital tools? How much, you know, did you know about screen time? Like all of those things are all great conversations to have with your colleagues. And then from there, if you have it with each other, you think of moments when you can have those same conversations with the students in your classroom as it comes up. And I think that's kind of how I was imagining it with the teachers.
Alex?
Yep. Again, lots of wisdom already being shared by Carrie Lee and Sandra. Very similar in our context. I'll maybe add a little bit of some other examples. So for the original set of cards, we gave them to parents and to teachers. And there was some interest from not all teachers, because it was just like a thing that was available in our staff room. And there was you know, a newsletter and a little bit of information about them. But the people that were picking them up were those more early adopters that wanted to use them in their advisory sessions. And with it, there have been some other materials I've been creating. One of them is from a session that Carrie Lee and I think Sandra, actually you were also there at the Apple Distinguished Educator event in Hong Kong earlier this year in November. There was this conversation we talked about the elements of the kind of guidance elements that we should be communicating to students. And one of them was setting clear expectations. So that's been something I've been kind of beating the drum about quite a bit at the school, about how teachers need to make their expectations clear. So while it's not necessarily the cards specifically, I think that conversations are happening around AI. And then our expansion pack has also been helpful. That also came out, you know, a few months later. So getting parents to similar, sorry, not parents, teachers to similarly have additional conversations. I think the thing is consistency and several on-ramps, several opportunities for people to talk about AI. And it doesn't necessarily have to be one parent coffee or one PD. It's the repetition and getting people to think about it. So the last quick example I'll share to just kind of start creating that culture is when I do offer a PD session in-house or abroad at a conference, I'll actually bring the cards with me and I'll scatter a few random ones on the table. So if we're talking about AI, I'll put the AI cards out and I'll actually ask people to use that as their kind of anchoring, kind of grounding. So their mind is now starting to think about AI. They're accessing their resourcefulness and they're leaving behind all of their distractions. And then inevitably someone will ask, oh, where did you get these cards? Well, let me tell you. And so I'll bring a few extras just to hand out. And I think it's kind of like a snowball starting to build up some momentum to change the world and to lead to one conversation at a time, as cheesy as that sounds, but I truly believe in it.
I think, and Carrie Lee just mentioned, you know, the clarity around AI use is so important for students and teachers, and really, and in Europe, we have GDPR, so it's pretty clear very quickly. I'm curious, and Sandra, I'll come back to you because I just want to build on what Carrie Lee and Alex and you all said, is that, you know, the engagement by teachers with AI, in my experience, is far more like, I'm good to go, I'll do it straight away, because A, they just have to talk like a human being to the thing and it answers their questions. It's not like they have to go file, cut, and they have to have various different menus, and it's not sequential, it's maybe not as technical. It's very a humane interaction, and you can, through Replica, start building your own AI coaches, teacher coaches, whatever you might want to do. Do you think because of that, there is a much faster adoption of these tools than, say, when you had Google Drive first came out, or Office 365, or some of these other tools like Kahoots, Quizlet? There are just hundreds of them. But, you know, they required much more front loading and understanding how those things worked, or an LMS. But now you just type whatever, or actually you just talk into your phone and it gives you an answer and it prints it out, then you're done. Do you think that's part of the cause for the enthusiasm and the engagement? And Carrie Lee.
Yeah, you raised some interesting points there. I think we're still seeing the same sort of teachers that would be interested in the early Google Drive are the same teachers that are really jumping on board in AI use, at least that I have seen. However, I think you bring up a really good point. I think really the entry point is saving them time and saving themselves like a little bit of hard work on a few things. Really makes them see the benefits of it. And then when they can see the benefits of it for their own use, their personal use, then I think they can understand how students, or why students, are so engaged in using it. And it sometimes feels to students, I believe, that teachers say it's okay for me, but not for you. And that's sort of not really what we want to encourage. And so I think there's a different entry level, I think, the saving time piece or the making my life easier piece certainly has meant that more people are giving it a little tiptoe. At least that's what I've found. What about you?
Sandra?
I think if I were to think about how quickly the adoption, I feel like the adoption for this has been a little bit more quick. Maybe as far as maybe early adopters or laggards, I could even see some of our laggards already picking up on it because there's just such a buzz around AI this and AI that. But in terms of how deep the usage might be where that barrier comes in on meaningful usage as well. So it's nice that people are at least going in and trying it for themselves. And I hear some of our leaders who normally don't touch technology saying, oh yeah, I use it every day. And so that's pretty exciting to know that they're at least using it for their own purpose. And then I think recently reading that Microsoft report, just how much, I think within a year and a half, you've already got 75%, I think was the number of people who are using AI regularly in their workplace. And people saying that if you don't use AI, we wouldn't hire new hires who don't have AI skills, like, or don't use AI. I think that's pretty quick adoption in comparison to some of the other technology. So in terms of my comparison, it would just be when Google came out, or I thought it was called Goggle at that time, but like, it was just so fast compared to Alta Vista or some of those other search engines. It was that would take forever and you wouldn't get good search results. But Google just came up with such quick results that were so right, spot on. I think that's kind of how I would compare AI right now to when Google first came out.
Great. Thank you, Alex.
Oh, so much to talk about here. I think where my mind is kind of going right now is AI is kind of like saying the internet. It's a whole category. It's a whole slew of different things and different tools. And I think really the internet is maybe not even an analogy. This is the next version of the internet. This is whatever version 3.0 or 4.0, if we're going to continue with that numbering system that you know, maybe it was 20 years ago that we started to hear that. My point, though, is that the internet and every single tool is being recreated right now. And basically, if you use technology or any software as service, anything, Google, Microsoft, you name it, everything's going to have some sort of automation built into it. And we're going to see that in the next 5 years or less. It's happening at such a rapid pace. If you just watch the money where all of these major companies are putting their R&D development funds, it's crazy. So I would estimate that by the time our current high school graduates are in university or starting to find their first job, we're going to see a significantly different world in which they need to know how to use AI, because that's just how you use all tools. So if you were to think about our job as tech coaches or as tech directors, tech influencers, if you will, I think it's to help kids to embrace their current reality, to embrace the world as it is today. Heck, that's even the job of teachers in my mind. But specifically as tech influencers for schools, this is a major change in the world. And the last, what I've heard others call black swan events, was COVID. I think that's one that's still fresh in all of our minds. We all had to learn how to teach online. Well, now you need to learn how to use this next version of every single piece of software that has automation built into it. So when I talk to teachers, I often mention, well, just remember your core values. Remember what you believe. You believe in encouraging students to do deep and original thinking that's probably creative, helps them to build on their own dispositions or to make new connections in the world. Awesome. Now, how can you do that if a tool is automating? Where's the human touch? Where's the collaboration, the conversation with their peers? So I think it's just a new form of planning and thinking. Google made people freak out. Calculators made people freak out. It was a change that how could we do research when Google can tell you all the answers and you don't have to look it up in a book and, you know, use, I don't know, encyclopedias. I think that this is just an adjustment, and I think that it's overall has benefits for society, but we have to engage with it and think about our core values and how do those core values still look
AI. I think this idea of what is the value-added proposition that an educator in schools bring to this narrative is the question everybody should be asking. And I think there are a bunch of quotes out that say AI actually is really helpful because now we know what we can do well and what it can't do well. And it kind of helps us really define. And Carrie Lee, you talked about quality use as the goal. You know, how do we use this well? I'm going to ask you a question, and I'm just really curious. We have 9 companies in the world that run AI. 3 are in China, 5 are in the US. 9 men have all the power and all the money, and these companies are buying on average, and I'm hesitant to give numbers, but multiple startups and other companies and making relationships with accounting services, newspapers, medical companies. And we actually don't have any say in how they go about doing things. We have no input. We basically receive, get excited, use it, leverage it as best as we can, and really make those purposeful decisions to make it meaningful in a school context. Is there something wrong here? Carrie Lee.
Honestly, you're probably just describing the tech industry for the last 25 years or so.
Exactly, exactly. But I think, that's a good point, Carrie Lee. Thank you.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely there is. And I think it's our job to keep questioning that and to keep pointing out. I love a lot of the work of Tricia Friedman, who constantly calls us to question where are the biases in this, you know, who's missing out in these conversations. And it's our job as educators to help point out those things so that we can have students be the future for the next iteration of whatever might come next, and to have them be thinking in those critical ways. So yeah, absolutely. It's just disappointing, I guess, on the whole, but at least we're asking the right questions now.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think your point's an important one. If we think of the advent of social media, there are just a few companies too, and very much the same, and, you know, biases and misinformation. So no, thank you for making that correction about how that's been with us much longer than maybe we want to remember. Sandra and then Alex.
Yeah, I was thinking exactly the same thing as Carrie Lee. I've been leading this group called Girls in STEM, and we're not only just looking at the tech part of things, but even in science, if you look at the research, the number of articles that are published, how many of them have been published by men. And I don't know if you've watched Lessons in Chemistry or read the book, but I mean, that just, you know, here's a woman scientist, and it's fictional, but it speaks much to that time where this woman chemist was trying to put her research out there and was silenced. And I'm thinking of Joe Bowler, actually, who just recently posted a blog post about her math research and how that was also published and then being silenced by men as well. And so I feel like there's many areas where there's knowledge and there's understanding that lacks diverse voices coming in to speak about the various perspectives. And probably I'm deep into my TOK mode right now, theory of knowledge mode, but I think helping our students understand that so that they can bring out their voices. And that's why I run this Girls in STEM program is, as we know, only about 35% of the STEM field has women in it. And so even the United Nations has been pushing and advocating for more women in the industry. So if we can, in all of our sectors, have more diversity of voices, not necessarily just gender, but it could be in on culture, in faith perspectives. All of that can really help us to deepen our understanding about the world and maybe move AI forward in a different way. But definitely it's a problem, and one that is flagged in many of the articles I've read about AI.
Thank you, Sandra. Alex?
Again, a lot of great points from Sandra and Carrie Lee. What I would add to this conversation is probably that I feel like we're witnessing an arms race between China and the US, and we're not really stopping to ask, should we? It seems like there's an assumption that we have to compete and fight against one another, and we want to be the country or the company to put out the most powerful tool. And a lot of people are predicting that that might result in AGI or artificial general intelligence or improper use of large language models or something like that. And I think that tech coaches and tech directors are on the front line. We're the ones who are leading these schools to talk to students about using technology the right way. And with AI specifically changing so quickly, I think that it's been taking a lot of my focus. I'm sure all of your focuses, but I'll just speak for myself here. It's been taking so much of my time and my focus just because I'm trying to keep up and trying to be that voice that can take complexity and simplify it for my community. And I think some people are whistleblowers in OpenAI, or I think even Elon Musk and other influential people have been saying this, that we should have a moratorium on AI development so we can figure out legislation. But do you really think that these major American companies like Google or OpenAI / Microsoft and Alibaba and Tencent and all of these other Chinese developers, do you think they're all really going to stop developing it, or are they going to secretly continue with this kind of arms race with one another?
Well, their shareholders want to make sure they don't stop. And that's the challenge sometimes. I think Sandra in the chat, thank you, just used the analogy of who's going to land on the moon first, kind of that arms race, the moon race, the technology race, the science race. I know that in the United States, once the first moon rocket went around the Earth, there was this whole big push towards science and math. And, you know, there were these kind of reactions. But I think one thing that you said, Alex, that it's really important is that in the roles that you have such an important role, each one of you, in trying to translate those complexities into language that teachers can grapple with, and then they can kind of internalize and make sense and say, oh, I can leverage this. This can be really helpful in making sure that the learning is rich and that my kids understand and that, you know, it's engaging and they're doing critical thinking and problem solving. And I think so often in the roles that you have, is it you're kind of the middle person, you're the diplomat, you're the ombudsman, trying to kind of juggle those tensions and saying, you know, we should be spending time on that or not. And you know, a lot of people said COVID was the best thing for tech integration because everybody was forced to go online and start using tech tools. You know, I'm not sure if that's true or not, but definitely there was much higher engagement. We're kind of coming to the end, and I would love to hear your respective, you know, if you were going to have the opportunity to share out to some educators and some school leaders who are our audience here, what are some things, you know, reflection points, maybe one or two reflection points you think you're grappling with or that you're trying to support students and teachers and parents to grapple with? Carrie Lee?
Yeah, I think when we have such a race in that automation industry and the AI use, I think really it comes back to what value did the humans in the building have? And I think that we need to really amplify our human connection. So that's why those those conversations become even more important. We need to be interacting with our students, with our own children, their colleagues, in positive and encouraging ways, and to have conversations that might be tricky or difficult. But I think the people part of it is where we need to anchor ourselves in, and we hope that through media mentor cards and all the other things that we've been talking about, that we're giving entry for that. So just to embrace the human parts and don't panic too much. Just stay calm and have the conversations.
Yeah. And I think, you know, and this has been your theme and arc, all three of you, is the idea of making the conversations, having the open dialogue. Sandra talked about different perspectives and different views and, you know, thinking about the multiculturalism. Everybody comes with different lenses and different entry points to a conversation. So I so appreciate you highlighting that humanity and really making sure we're remember we're humans, we have these unique values, and we bring so much to the table. How can we cohabitate maybe with these AI tools and these digital technologies that surround us? Sandra.
Yeah, I think like after COVID, two big things have kind of come up, one being AI and the other being well-being. And what I feel like Media Mentor Month really brings forth is both, where, you know, let's look at our well-being. We've been online for so long, for a few years, and a lot of people actually kind of resorted, like, from being online all the time to like no more tech, and and so having these conversations like not no more tech, but how do we have healthy tech, and how can we look at our well-being in all of this, alongside with, yes, we know AI is here now and it can be scary and there are a lot of issues and a lot of things we don't know about. But again, how can we engage in it in a healthy way and not be fearful, but kind of approach it in a way where we're dialoguing and really working with each other and collaborating with each other on ideas.
I really like your observation, is that the idea of well-being and tech, you know, kind of the idea of also making that front and center. And we've had quite a few podcasts here with different guests about that issue and that topic. So thank you for highlighting how, and the dialogue, again, you're highlighting the importance of having the dialogue and having those conversations, and then well-being being in the forefront. Thank you, Sandra, for that. Alex?
I think my closing thought is that this is not just a tool. And I think that educators and parents, all people that raise children, need to have the mentality that it's not just a tool. This is a significant change that's going to impact our children today and in their futures. And the simple act of having a conversation and talking to kids about our world, talking to them about what they believe around thinking or about justice and bias, all of these major concepts, it's not a hard thing, but I think it might be an uncomfortable thing, because parents often, or teachers too, want to be an expert. And I think that it's okay that we lean into the idea that we're co-learning with children. Nobody has the answer, and we don't know how AI and automation will impact children in the future. We all really don't know. It's such a exciting and scary time at the same time. And I think that the only thing that we can do is engage with them and think about what we believe and what's right. What do these tools do for our thinking, or how do they take away our thinking? It's such a simple thing, but because so many people are uncomfortable to have that conversation, I think that we often avoid it. And I think that for teachers, I'm not trying to pass any blame or anything, but I think that teachers often say something along the lines of, I don't have the time. I think that even hallway conversations, a moment before you start a class, when you set expectations before a learning task, when you're having lunch with a kid, or when you walk with them to the cafeteria, finding those little moments as an educator or as a parent, when you're having dinner, when you're in the car, all those little moments are opportunities to have a conversation with your kid. So I hope that the Media Mentor Month cards help to kind of spark the inspiration for those little moments. But I just want to come back to the main idea that I am concluding this portion of the call with, that this is a significant change to our world, and we need to respect that change and have short chats with our kids. I don't think it's too big of a task, but I think it's a hard and uncomfortable thing sometimes.
Yeah, and thank you for bringing up the point how important it is to have those conversations, and the provocation of the Media Mentor Month is a great vehicle to really engage people and put them in situations. I think the other thing is time. You know, where do we find the time? You know, we were just talking to the CEO of Teachers Without Borders, and he says, you know, teachers are very good with the urgency of tyranny. And he says we should really be focusing on the tyranny of urgency, you know, kind of thinking about those. Thank you all. I again want to remind our audience that these cards are Media Mentor Month, and they've been going on since 2018. And you will find them through Carrie Lee's website. Is that the best place to go, Carrie Lee, right now?
I think so, yeah. CarrieLeeBeasley.com.
Yeah. And Alex and Sandra also have shared links and their bios. You definitely want to be following them. And they're doing amazing work. All three people do phenomenal work in the space. And we're really excited that you took the time to meet with us. And I can't wait to see the next cards. And for the audience, remember the show notes. You'll get much more about each of our guests and also some great resources. And you can connect with them on your favorite social media platform to see what they're doing. Carrie Lee, Sandra, and Alex, thank you so much for being part of the International Schools Podcast.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you. And so sorry about the noise.
No worries.